Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop. Right on.
Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
All right. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, you're a guy who can make things happen, you know? I'm always so excited to be around you because you can make things happen. I have one request.
Yeah?
Can you somehow change the weather back to the 77 degrees we had yesterday? go ahead.
No. Yesterday was spectacular. I planned to do a day of outside work so I could get it in. But I had looked at the weather forecast, and it looks to me like that was the end.
That's the end?
Yeah, the end.
You want to elaborate on what you mean by that's the end?
I don't mean the end of the world. I just mean the end of the warm.
Well, the end of the warm.
You look out now. Yeah.
You look out
I
now.
I looked at the 15-day forecast. I looked at the 15-day forecast, and it doesn't get warm again.
When you talk about warm, I guess we could talk about 50. We have to temper what we mean by warm, right?
Well, 50 isn't. We don't even get to 50 in the 15-day forecast.
That's what I'm talking about.
This forecast is designed to make deer hunters happy, I think.
Yeah. So what is it, Sandy? About the cold weather and deer, and makes it possible for the deer hunters, why they love the cold weather so much.
Well, they particularly like snow, I think.
I know,
then they can
track.
But then they can see where the deer are. Other than that, I don't know. Maybe I think it's because it justifies drinking a lot of Schweppes while they sit up in their tree stands.
Let's see. Drinking alcohol.
Drinking, shooting alcohol, shooting rifles.
Is that how that works?
I do believe that deer hunters carry little hip flasks to keep themselves warm during the cold misery of sitting in a tree.
Well, yeah. you call it misery. I've never done it. But I watched the shows where they do that, and they look like they're having a ball, man. It looks like, you know, it's a party.
To me, actually, everything about deer hunting looks like fun except shooting the deer. I had a beautiful 8-point buck in my yard last week, and I watched it, took a movie of it on my camera, and the last, very last thing in the world I could ever imagine is just
shooting
to put
that
a
deer.
Putting a bullet at that beautiful animal.
You know, Sandy, I had a veterinarian on, and she was talking about animals and the sociology of animals, and I'm like, she was talking as if the animals kind of have the same kind of thing that humans have. They interact with one another. They're more than just animals. I mean, they're living creatures with brains and feelings and all sorts of things. And I couldn't help but think about the deer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, deer can be tamed. Deer have, I think, you know, I don't think animals have intellects that are so much different from one another. And dogs, all you have to do is have a dog and to realize how terribly smart they are, and what range of emotions they have, and I'm sure that all these other animals have it too. They just manifest it differently, but yeah,
you know. So anyway, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the outcome of these elections, and I needed to ask you too. you know, we go right into now planning for 2024. There is no respite. All of the money people and all of the planners are now busy putting together piles of money to get ready for 2024. What are your thoughts about the outcomes of the election, Sandy, both locally and nationally? And is there an opportunity for healing in this country?
Well, you know, I had the same kind of feeling Wednesday morning and today that I had after the Biden election 2 years ago, which was that this seemed hopeful. And it does seem hopeful. I do think that Trumpism seemed to suffer a real setback. Clearly, the result in Wisconsin, Evers getting elected at the same time as Johnson being elected, suggests to me that people are thinking. My conclusion from that was that when you send a senator to Washington, some people are less interested in who the person is or the quality of that person, and they're more interested in what the vote will be. Is it a Republican or Democrat? Because they're counting votes for the team in that circumstance more than they're looking at the fiber of the individual. The governor is more selected based on the individual, your view of the individual. So that all seems sensible to me. Man, I don't agree with it, but I understood that outcome. And I'm confident that Johnson was not elected because he was a supporter of Trump. I think he was elected because he had a Republican label. Nationally, clearly, Trump, the whole kind of crazy Trump stuff suffered some lumps, and that was hopeful to me. And the fact that I think the Democrats should not take too much comfort from this, because I do believe that this was more a vote against Trump than it was a vote for Biden. I think that Trumpism has become repulsive to a lot of people. And so I think it was the repellent nature of Trump more than the attractive nature of what the Democrats have offered. I think the Democrats have not, clearly, it's hard to attribute cause to them as much as CJ would like to. I think the voters were not attributing as much causal relationship between Democrats being in office and, for instance, inflation as people had hoped, at least on the Republican side.
So, Sandy, it kind of turned out that, you know, women overwhelmingly supported the Democrats. And even though the Republicans tried to dismiss Roe versus Wade, it turned out, that was probably the main reason that this was not a red wave.
Well, you know, I think this is the one time I will say I told you so. Right after Roe v. Wade was overturned, my belief was that the dog had caught the car.
Yes.
And that all these people who were doing all this ideological arm waving about being against abortion were now going to run into the fact that 65 or 70% of Americans believe that women ought to have choice about their own bodies and to make decisions that were as profoundly as important as bearing children. And that's what's happened, clearly. I mean, clearly, when you look at the demographic, particularly of women, if you look at women who are in childbearing age, those women voted substantially. First of all, they came out and voted. And secondly, they voted Democratic.
You know, women outnumber men, are more and more likely to vote than men. And they really did send a message. And Republicans tried to dismiss that on a national scale. And they tried to change the conversation to the economy and yes, inflation and those kinds of things. And yes, those things matter. But clearly women felt like they were betrayed by the Republican Party with what took place, and even probably women who would have voted Republican could not find themselves, you know, supporting what took place. They felt like they, you know, this was a blow to them, and you know, Robin Voss has already come out and said he's ready to do some compromising on, what happened with the overturning of Roe versus Wade. So I think Republicans are going to, in the long run, realize this anger is not going to go away.
Yeah, I think that you ultimately pay a price for forming a coalition of strange bedfellows that are all based on social issues. The Republican Party has for decades now been riding a couple of horses, and none of them really relate to a public policy that involves federal government activity. They're riding the horse of local crime issues. They're riding the horse of local school outcome problems, and they rode the horse of the religious issues, abortion substantially, and race. All of those things ultimately can really bite them in the bottom, and the first one has abortion, the abortion issue. When they were running, they knew, anybody who took polls understood, that they were whipping up the emotions of people who were their base but were not the dominant part of American thinking. And now they're paying the price, and they're going to pay the price. They're going to pay the price on the rest of these too. This dog whistle racism that has been sort of a dominant theme during these Trump years, and quite frankly, was a dominant theme of the Ron Johnson advertising, is going to bite them in the bottom. Because I don't think that ultimately, I think when America works this all out and realizes that there's much more unity between social classes than there is between ethnicities. When the middle class and lower middle class of America realizes that they need health care and they need daycare and they need these issues that actually are unified interests across borders, Republicans are going to find out they've been wrong about this.
You know, Sandy, those things that we've been talking about over the last several months, I really do think that you're 100% correct. Republicans aren't going to win any major elections until they come to grips with the things you just said, you know, because there are more people who are struggling in the society who want to see those kind of changes than what they're pointing at. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, we're still, things still aren't totally settled. But even if the Republicans win the House, And even if they win the Senate, we're going to have what we have at the state level, and that's gridlock. And so is it, when you've got gridlock, you know, on the state level, on the national level, people want things to get done, Sandy. We celebrate the fact that, okay, the Republicans will celebrate that they will win the House and the Senate. But all that means is that the president can veto whatever it is they're talking about. The same thing on the state level. The mayor can veto. We're right back where we were and nothing gets done. So how do we overcome that?
Well, I do think that bad gridlock is some of what sponsors this concept of cultism towards individuals. You know, the people want things accomplished
and this democratic process doesn't seem to accomplish it. So they begin veering their thoughts towards giving the government to someone like Donald Trump, you know, the people who are really frustrated and angry. And they want things to change. So they say, well, how can we make things change? Well, I guess we'll give a lot of power to an individual who will change things. So I do think it's important for democracy, ultimately, that democracy will only survive if we can work a system that doesn't involve gridlock, which is why I think the parliamentary process ends up being a little bit more sensible, where the process of governing involves coalitions and necessarily does, and everyone understands it. And it seems to accomplish things, whereas a two-party system failed to accomplish much.
So when you look at Netanyahu and Israel, and now he's back in the driver's seat, so to speak, he is not governing because he's the guy who's in charge. He's got to build a government. So walk us through, Sandy, what that means and why that is a better system, in your opinion, than what we're dealing with.
Well, I wouldn't want to have something like the Israeli coalitions. The Knesset is parliament, okay? But I just mean the way government is played out in Israel, they have because of the pressures, the external pressures created by the Palestinian situation, they have quite extremes operating there. But if you look at France or England or any of the other governments, they all work the same way. You have to put together a cabinet, and you have to put, and the cabinets are comprised of professional politicians, people who, they don't believe in term limits. And they don't even talk about having term limits in those places because the job of being a politician involves quite a bit of professionalism. They have shadow governments. In England, for instance, there's the opposition has a shadow government to the existing government. And when the government holds a press conference, the people on the outside who want to be on the inside hold a press conference and describe what their government would be doing in the same circumstance. And so you've got this dynamic tension that involves a pretty professional approach to government. And these people can formulate governments and formulate cabinets and have things continue to be accomplished in a manner that's far different than we have. Certainly America's accomplished a lot over its lifetime, but the last 30 years have involved a kind of gridlock that has frustrated the ability of the country to make positive changes, and it's forced us to resort to a politics that looks at issues that are not important to the foundations of America, and rather are these more or less peripheral social issues that attract a lot of attention but don't involve governance.
You know, Sandy, at the rate things are going now, you just can't see a way that we can heal this kind of rift and move forward with the important issues that impact and affect the American people. I mean, so you get into the silo, Democrat, Republican, and you're protecting, you know, your team. And so you can't somehow see that, hey, maybe we've the brighter folk amongst us who are in, you know, politics, they Sandy, it's almost like it's sacrilege to even think about, you know, having this dialogue with the other side.
Well, I think if the Democrats were smart, and I think they are smart, but I think they should behave like they're smart, I think that they would start appealing to socioeconomic conditions and groups and stop working with and talking about ethnocentric, patchwork of ethnocentric coalition of interests, and talk about the socioeconomic condition that unifies people so that, you know, these people who are the sort of struggling median family income family that we've talked about so much should be appealed to across the board. People who are in the lower middle class should be appealed to about the issues that relate to them, regardless of their race or their geography, because, you know, we talk about gerrymandering and we talk about the problems of the coalition of red versus the coalition of blue. But it's really, I think, a function of the Democrats losing a grip on and having losing their capacity to communicate with the more rural parts of America. Because I'll tell you, 50 years ago, the map of America didn't look the same as it does now. And rural America was not in a unified red position. And all the Democrats need to do is start appealing to people based on their socioeconomic condition. And people who are lower middle class brown and black people will have a unified interest with lower middle class white people.
All right, listen.
They'll be unified.
We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Phone lines open, as always, at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, I don't want to move away from the outcomes of the elections just yet, because I think that the window is open. Excuse me, I really do. I think the best thing that could have happened was that the Republicans didn't get what they wanted, and that's total control of things. And now they've had this kind of stop and take a look at what they were doing. And I think that there's going to be some kind of olive branch that I think that they're going to have to extend, because I think when they've been denied the fact that they were trying to, you know, take and lead and people down a path that may not even been the best path for themselves and their families, that they've got to rethink this, Sandy. I mean, it's not like the Republicans and what they talk about has been accepted across the board. There's, even when Donald Trump was there, there were still many Republicans who didn't agree with what he was doing. So maybe the Republicans also have to do some soul searching, and if they ever want to get back in power.
I think it was an interesting election, because I think both parties learned something from it. Hopefully the Democrats didn't view it as something like a mandate.
Right.
They did so much better than expected, because if they look at what Ron DeSantis did in Florida, they better figure out what the message was that Ron DeSantis was providing to Florida, because he won overwhelmingly, right? And Florida has traditionally been pretty close to a purple state. It's getting redder and redder. But then the view of the Democrats for the last 6 years was that Florida would be getting bluer and bluer. So I think there is something in his message that they ought to look at, which is the Democrats should start focusing much more, I think, profoundly on the socioeconomic issues and not so much the social issues. And I don't think that the party necessarily is so profoundly involved with things that DeSantis would call wokeism. But DeSantis's campaign was almost entirely against what he paraphrased as wokeism. And it seemed to really strike a chord, because he did very, very well. And I think that the Democratic Party needs to figure out how to amplify its attention on issues that really matter to lots of people on a socioeconomic basis. And I think it's the fundamental ones you and I have talked about. You know, it's health care, it's aid for
daycare,
preschool aid and preschool education, daycare, healthcare, and those two things are profoundly important.
You know, Sandy, were you surprised that Governor Evers survived? Okay, he's not. Governor Evers is, and he kind of referred to himself tongue in cheek as Mr. Rogers. That's kind of what Barack Obama called him when he was here. And Governor Evers knows who he is. Do you think he got a second term because people, be they Democrat or Republicans, know who he is? They're not going to be surprised by anything. He is a man that you can believe what he says. He's not going to try to misconstrue or lead you down a path. He's a vanilla guy. And do you think that that works?
Well, I think what worked is what I said in the beginning, which is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think there's nothing going on in Wisconsin right now that anyone could run against that say, you know, where they could say the governor was doing something wrong. You know, they had to resort to looking at some the outcomes that are occurring in the city of Milwaukee with respect to crime and try to pin that on the governor in some indirect way, like he hadn't fired the DA of Milwaukee, and therefore the crime. Crime in Milwaukee was his responsibility. I mean, it was just a far-fetched effort to try and find something wrong in Wisconsin that could be pinned to the tail of the governor. Because I think, you know, Evers done a good job. And I think that happily the people of Wisconsin decided that that was more important than pure politics.
You know, Sandy, I also believe that the legislature has to come back now. They'll come back. There's conversations about, you know, willing to do some work, to kind of work with the governor now. You know, the governor is clearly, there are people who say that Governor Evers is a moderate guy. He really is. And so he's not a guy who is a progressive. And so there were progressives who wanted to push him further to the left. But that's not who he is. He's a guy who you know what you're getting, right? I mean, you know exactly what you're getting with Governor Evers, and he's acceptable. And there are some of us who we're comfortable if we don't expect these major surprises by somebody. And Governor Evers, whether it's because of his policies or not, the state's sitting on a $5 billion surplus, right? How can you kick him to the curb and bring in a guy like Tim Michaels. Who I really found out later on, I'm hearing a lot of Republicans saying, well, he wasn't the right guy. A lot of people are saying that now, but what I don't understand, Sandy, is why are they saying that now when they overwhelmingly said this is the guy?
Well, I think it's easier to look in the rearview mirror to decide who the right guy was. You know, it's Monday morning.
Yeah, Monday morning quarterbacking, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go to line. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. Go ahead.
Let's go to line one in Casa. What is that her name?
Cassandra.
Okay. Hey, Cassandra. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Well, I just wanted to say that we should not over-exaggerate DeSantis' performance in Florida. Much of his high performance, I would say, or his high percentage had to do with voter suppression of blacks with his election integrity voting commission or that he held. So if he were to run for the presidency, he would not have those laws in place. He would not be able to use those voter intimidation or voter suppression strategies for in many of the states. And so he would have a much harder time getting elected. And the last thing I wanted to add was that I was just really pleased with the turnout of the young people. When I went to vote in Middleton, I saw a group of young women who were voting. And so as I was leaving the polls, I thanked them for coming out and exercising their right to vote. So, and although it's disappointing, Mandela was not able to be successful, but he he fought a good fight, and I certainly hope he remains in politics. I believe that he will have a good future, and there are other offices that he should consider.
Hey, Cassandra, do you think that the young ladies coming out in Middleton without question was unbelievable and their turnouts, but do you think the abortion situation had something to do with it?
I didn't have a chance to talk to those young ladies who were coming out of the poll, but I did speak with some of my students because I teach college, and many of the black students said that they were going to vote, and they said this was the first or second time for many of them. They wanted to vote for Mandela Barnes. So that is what the sense I was hearing. That was he was the one who really motivated them to go to the polls. And it wasn't so much abortion, which I was surprised. They really wanted representation in the Senate. So that's what I picked up. That's what I picked up from my students.
Hey, Cassandra, thank you very much. Thank you for listening, as always, and thank you for chiming in. Let's go to CJ from Stoughton. Hey, good morning, CJ. How you doing?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Again, thank you for taking my call. Many of the hosts won't anymore. yes, abortion played a huge role, and the Democrats are better at lying about their opponents' positions than the Republicans. And they'll do anything and say anything to misrepresent what their opponent, the Republican opponent, believes. Tim Michaels, yes, his revelation about exceptions for rape and incest was too little too late. And the mere fact that the threat of our democracy, as your party played it, did play a huge role. But this probably was really good for the Republican Party, because we've got some tremendous candidates coming 2024. I love Trump's policies, not so much him. And we've got tremendous candidates, and yes, help is on its way.
So CJ, hang on. I want Sandy to respond about the Democrats lying on the Republicans. Sandy?
Well, I don't know. I think you get into an argument about who can spin what the best, Republicans or Democrats, CJ. I think you'll have a hard time persuading somebody that one side's better at it than the other. And particularly in the last 8 years, the Republicans' version of the Trump version of Republicanism has certainly been filled with something less than the truth.
Sandy, I got a question for you.
Oh, okay.
You say that, but I've never heard you speak of social media like Facebook, Zuckerberg, having the FBI come to them and tell them to squash our institutions. FBI and CIA have been politicized, and you refuse to even acknowledge the fact that Zuckerberg was approached by the FBI. We found out that the Hunter story is true. It was buried during the 2020 election.
Wait a minute, CJ. Whether you and I have an opinion about whether the FBI approached Facebook has nothing to do with the reality of whether it happened or not. I have no idea.
Zuckerberg said it did.
Well, then it did happen. You know, I've never participated in a discussion about whether it happened or not. I tend to reserve my judgment on facts. I reserve my judgment on facts to ones that I'm personally aware of.
Would that concern you?
Would what concern me?
If that was true, that Zuckerberg was approached by our FBI, would that concern you?
CJ. CJ.
See, I have no idea what happened in the conversation.
CJ.
No, I'm not going to answer CJ. Yes or no.
We're talking about CJ. We're talking about the results of the election. We're not talking about the rest of those things, right? So we're trying to see if there's some common ground after what happened. And listening to you, apparently, there isn't any common ground because the Republicans what you said they were going to do. They didn't have a tsunami. They didn't get it. It didn't happen.
Yeah, because abortion is your number one concern. And the false sense of democracy, well, people exercise their democracy. So people still can get their weed and abortions in Illinois.
Oh, my.
Your party won. Way to go, Democrats.
All right, CJ. Get over it, man. Get over it. You know, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. It's Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines. And Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, Earl. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Second, you notice that right away they had to go to a micro level. They had to go to the Hunter Biden's laptop or whatever.
Man.
You know what? First off, if Hunter Biden did something illegal, he should go to jail. Sorry. That's the way it should be. Just like Donald Trump and Jared Kushner, when he went and got $2 billion from the Saudis, he should go to jail too. I mean,
why is it an issue, man? Who cares? We've got more serious things to deal with.
100%. And when CJ says he believes in the policies of the Republican Party, I don't even know what the hell he means, because I don't even know what a policy is of the Republican Party. I mean, their policy is cut taxes. Cut taxes on the wealthy.
Actually,
make the rich richer.
Actually, Tom, it's interesting. The only policy I'm aware of that the Republican Party has is don't vote for Democrats.
Right, exactly. So I don't even understand.
Everything they do is aimed at making sure that Democrats don't get in office. But once again, Republicans winning election is like the dog catching the car, because they don't know what to do with the office other than cut taxes. That's the only policy they've ever implemented.
You know what? I would pray that we would have more people like Manny the other day, that actually was a sensible Republican that you could actually talk with, that it wasn't bought off by either money or by the perception of things. Because, you know what, maybe we could actually get some common ground there. But you can't get common ground with someone that's saying, oh, what about Hunter Biden? You can't get somewhere with common ground with saying, oh, the Latinos are rapists. I mean, that doesn't bring us common ground. That's a food fight is what that is. What we need to do is we need, number one, as I've always said, get money out of politics. If we don't get money out of politics and out of media, because the media, you'll go back in time. Shoot, go back to the 70s, I guess, when they didn't have commercials every 2 seconds on TV and everywhere you look and trying to, put the food fight in front of people, so therefore they're all divided. And we should be having a class war against the uber rich in this country, the billionaire class. There's 99% of us. There's 1% of
Well,
them.
You know, you
why
know,
it is that we can't.
You know, Tom, you hear CJ And he says, well, the Democrats did a lot of lying. And maybe he didn't see the commercials that we all saw, right?
Well, you know. And Earl, let's ask ourselves this question. Sandy, I want to ask you this question. How many times since Citizens United, 20 years, has the mainstream or the corporate media even explained what Citizens United is all about? What is it that the mainstream media, have they ever said anything that the problem is money in politics? No, because they're getting advertising dollars. But I would ask you, have you heard anything at all, you know, since 20 years when Citizens United was passed? Have you heard anything where a media establishment has actually said the problem with our political system is money in politics? Have you ever heard that?
Well, actually, you make a good point, Tom. I would say that as much as the media likes to ride issues that stir up the public's attention, they have not focused attention on that issue. And obviously, there's a reason, because they make as much money during the election year as retailers make during Christmas season. I mean, election year is Christmas season for the media.
You know, the other question I would have, Sandy, is, you know, the ad buys like 10 cents on a dollar when it comes to campaigning. To me, that makes no sense whatsoever. You know, if you're going to charge the regular rate for a mom and pop shop for advertising, but when it comes to the political ads, they're down to basically a penny on a dollar. What sense does that make?
Well, volume. Yeah, oh. Look how much money. There were billions of dollars spent on advertising in this 6-week period running up to this campaign. Billions. You know,
Isn't that something where we, the American people, need to look at ourselves and say, hey, look, there's something not right here in Denmark. I mean, there's something not right when there's billions of dollars which could be spent on actual daycare for children and a universal child care program or, you know, building an infrastructure of some sort. I mean, this is just unbelievably crazy. The things we spend our money on. We spend money on elections. We spend money on the military-industrial complex. We spend money on these different things, but we don't spend money on the people that actually pay the taxes. This does not make any sense to me. We should have a Social Security and Medicare system that should last for the end of time. But instead, we're spending billions of dollars on an election.
Hey, Tom.
You know what? And I want to ask one other question to Sandy. Sandy, what do you see? Because here's the thing. Democrats need to make money also in order to run for election. If they don't make money to run for election, then and they take the high road and say, hey, I'm not going to take money or whatever it is, then they lose. Because 94% of the elections, the person that spends the most money actually wins.
Okay.
But how is it that we can solve this problem? How can we solve this problem?
Quickly, we got to go to break. Sandy, you want to respond quickly?
Well, he's right. We have to get money out of elections. We've got to get back to the point where we can have the kind of restrictions that we used to have in the 70s and 80s on corporate giving and put restrictions on the amount of money that can be given by an individual to politics.
Sounds good, but I think the train has already left the station. I don't know how you turn it around, Sandy.
You can only turn it around with a Supreme Court decision or a constitutional amendment. And I think it has to be a Supreme Court decision, quite frankly.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll come back to Sandy. We'll be joined by Ms. Galen Reske. She's a senior dining program director. And Lori O'Connor, Nutritional Outreach Coordinator for Milwaukee County Department of Health and Human Services. It's Friday, and so it's their hour. We'll come back to Sandy. Be right back.